two college radio DJs during the 90s. Hosts Keith and Steve helped expose bands like Nirvana, Pavement, and PJ Harvey. They went to shows, interviewed musicians, and reviewed albums for various zines and papers. They worked security at concerts and once even did load-in for Phish. Now they're dads. Whether you want to explore lesser-known music or take a trip down memory lane, tune in to the New Dad Rock. Join hosts Keith and Steve as they navigate the ages together, sharing their love of music across various eras and genres. Always well-intentioned, often well-informed, seldom boring, the New Dad Rock will expand your mind.
Hey, Rockin' Dads! This is the New Dad Rock.
Welcome, Rockin' Dads and music enthusiasts, to another exhilarating episode of the New Dad Rock.
New!
I'm Keith, and as always, I'm joined by my fantastic co-host, Steve! How's it going, Steve?
So my kids know Dick Van Dyke because one of the seasons of Scooby-Doo was all special guest stars, and we had a bunch of seasons of Scooby-Doo on DVD. So they know, like, Mama Cass, Dick Van Dyke, that's what they call him, Dick Van Dyke. The Harlem Globetrotters, of course, were a special guest one time.
That's good.
Yeah, but
that's
we had those on DVD. So my kids knew Dick Van Dyke, and then we tied it in. We're like, yeah, that's the same dude in Mary Poppins.
Dude, so you just dated yourself twice. So 70s cartoons, and when are DVDs from?
Right, but I was watching DVDs with my kids of 70s shows.
Oh my. So many different decades represented in that statement.
My kids are old enough to have watched DVDs. We actually still have a couple. We have a DVD player still.
It gets used maybe five times a year. Yeah. I have some DVDs, but no... I have a DVD player that I use for my band, and I have a projector because we'd film our own things. I'd have to burn them to DVDRs, and then I'd project behind the band. Anyway, enough about my youth.
Yeah, well, speaking of our youth back in the early days, and, you know, dear listeners, we've been starting a journey through the origins of the New Dad Rock, starting with the year 1970, which, if you tuned into last week's episode, I don't know, we talked about the Doors, the Velvet Underground, and all the news and putting it in perspective. The Beatles broke up, but now we're moving on to 1972, as you can probably see by the episode number.
Yeah, we're skipping ahead to Steve's birth year. This is when Steve came upon the scene and unleashed his demonic vision.
Yeah, and all the while listening to 8-track cassettes. Click, click.
Oh, man, I had some 8-track. Anyway, before we get there, we got to go to our segments. Steve, what's up with the lizard?
The lizard. So I don't know if we're going to be able to actually keep up with news from the lizard every week. But King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard. Oh, this is a funny one. I saw former Queensryche singer Jeff Tate. They had an acrimonious split. Jeff Tate has been solo for years. He played in the Patchogue Theater, like 4 miles from my house. So me and Tina, hi Tina, went to the show. And we saw Jeff Tate in a, I guess, 2/3 full theater in Patchogue. Mm-hmm. And the whole point, this is why it matters to the King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard. Somebody there had a King Gizzard shirt on. And that means, I think, they've reached ubiquity.
Yeah, I bet you would have seen more at the Pavement show if you'd gone to the Pavement show with Four Nights in Brooklyn again.
Yeah, so it's crazy. This is where my priorities are at this point. Instead of seeing Ween or Pavement this week in New York, I went to the place like that takes me 15 minutes to get to, and I can park right out front, and I saw Jeff Tate.
Hey, fully respect that. I actually went to the Mann Center outside Philadelphia for the first time. It's closer than the city to me. I think it was a 20-minute cab ride back, but I saw Beck in Phoenix.
Yeah, well, that's the benefit you have. I live way the heck out in the suburbs. You're pretty close to the city center. So that's true. Listeners, is the difference. I'm out seeing like Silent Lucidity and something that is very close to a Broadway spectacle of a rock show. You know, the nearest approximation, but no.
Like a rock opera? Interesting.
It's almost what it seemed like. His whole backing band was like under 30. So it was like he was the star and he had all the moves.
Dude. Hold on. I saw, oh my, why am I blanking now? The lead singer of Bauhaus, Peter Murphy, right? He was doing like a
I think he had to go to LA for some criminal charges. He's living in Constantinople. It's now Istanbul, whatever. And Istanbul. He has to go. Yeah, that's right. So he has to go back.
Why'd they change it?
Different rulers. So they could sell new maps. I swear he picked up a Bauhaus cover band, like talking about like a real young band. You know, the three guys in the band were amazing, way younger, and he'd sing over them, which makes sense. If you're the lead singer of a terrific band that there's now cover bands who play your music well, you really could just be their lead singer.
Very exciting.
Yeah, hey.
And you know, in 19...
Good.
What? I was going to say in 1972, the song Telegram Sam, the original version that Bauhaus later covered, the original versions by T-Rex came out in 1972. So I don't want to skip ahead to the main part of the show, but that's a teaser for what we're going to lay on you.
Okay. Before we go back in time. Oh, my God. Is it 50 years? Woo! 51 years? I don't see how that's possible. Anything new that you're listening to that's out that you want to tell people about?
One band that I feel like just does not get enough credit, and we've mentioned them a few times, but Spoon. These guys are top notch. They're professionals. They're everywhere. Their songs are great. People know Spoon. They're like in commercials in the background of like movies and TV shows. Like,
yeah, Spoon. They also sound like a genre of music, like personify it. So even if you haven't heard it, you think you've heard it, or it's familiar sounding because it's just rock and roll.
You can't go wrong with Spoon. So they put out an EP, 3 songs, 14 minutes. It's called Memory Dust. And there's not even a song on there called Memory Dust. 2 original songs, 1 Bo Diddley cover. It's excellent. It's 15 minutes of your time. I wish it was pressed in a 10-inch record. But otherwise, Spoon.
You and your 10-inch records.
Kira's got the 10 and a half.
I got to tell you this. Another band we've talked about, the OCs, they put out their 27th album.
They're ahead of the King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizarders.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're ahead of them by a couple, but they must be counting all the...
Yeah, they're only at 24.
Well, they're gonna pass them very, very soon. Again, I assume they're just using all the different spellings of OCs and not the Coach Whips or not his other bands. But anyway, yeah. I gotta say... Their latest album's like a synth pop inspired
Intercepted Message album. Is the name.
Totally. John Dwyer in the bio for the new album called it a pop record for the tired times.
Interesting.
I'm going to call it a couple songs. And it's not the songs that sound like all their other songs, which sounds like the other albums, you know, which is why people probably buy it. But later on, there's this song called Always at Night. It's 7 minutes long. It sounds just like a Beck song on Quaaludes.
Do Quaaludes still exist?
No one's going to get that riff. Okay. But the last song is a mostly instrumental track called LADWP, Hold, which I suppose is supposed to be the hold music for the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, LADWP, which is the nation's largest municipal utility. And this song sounds a lot like John Dwyer's solo project called Damaged Bug. And then one more song that... this one reminds me of a Modest Mouse song when it's like, this plane is definitely coming down or whatever. This one's called The Fish Needs a Bike. Yeah, and it sounds like Captain Beefheart or Frank Zappa. I think he just says, fish needs a bike. The fish needs a bike. The fish needs a bike. Which, I mean, I get a fish needs a bike.
Yeah, I get it. It's a U2 song in the Guinness brewery in Dublin. There's an actual bicycle with fish pedaling it. So
really?
It's a common phrase. It's around and about in a boot.
Tell me about your unspoken theory around our new style of podcasting.
The new direction home, if you will. So yeah, I think last week, I might have said it at the top. So I think last week we kind of drew a line in the sand and said, okay, from 1970 on, this is where we were. There was rock and roll. There was some things bubbling underground, but there was a proliferation, I feel like, around 70 in styles. So people started going off in directions. Like, instead of pop music, there was now psychedelic rock and roll. Metal starts with, you know, Sabbath. Now, by 72, you've got Zeppelin, there's multiple albums in. and Deep Purple is another major player in the 70s. Other bands like UFO and the Scorpions are just really starting, and they're going to inspire the people that we talk about in the late 70s and the 80s episodes. So it's a constant churn, and we're getting into the 70s. It's now that next generation. Rock and roll has come in the 60s. It electrified in the mid 60s. Even Miles Davis went on an electrical route. And now this is the next generation that was already inspired by that as they grew up. And voila. Glam,
yeah.
Metal, country rock, singer-songwriter, so many, krautrock.
You make a good point that everything starts to fragment or diverge even more. People are being more experimental. This is, because I wasn't born in 72, but also I didn't have an older brother. But this is like the genre of music I found after I got into the music I got into. And after like 20 years of being into music, I had to go backwards. It was like archaeology or anthropology. I was excavating, you know, the sonic sound.
Well, I think with the exception of maybe David Bowie, who was still an active and relevant artist by the time we were kids, a lot of these bands had fallen by the wayside or broken up, and they were inspiring the bands that we listened to, or even inspired the bands that they listened to. So they were... We were at least a generation, if not two generations, removed from a lot of this music.
Yeah. You make a point about Bowie. So Bowie's one of the like longest singer or musicians ever. What did he put out in 72?
Well, go back to last week or the last episode in 1970. He was mostly acoustic, kind of Dylan-esque, inspired by Donovan and Dylan at the time, acoustic guitars. And now in 72... he's full on glam. He's doing the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust. You know, his most flamboyant creation. Along with him, you've got Lou Reed has gone off separate from the Velvet Underground. You have these other bands like New York Dolls and Roxy Music that are really starting to push that long hair, the you know, almost cross-dressing type of style that they're putting on in a show. It's a true on spectacle. And I think you can even trace that back a little bit to Jim Morrison from The Doors, who said, "I'm the diva. I'm the focus of the show." And you have people like Robert Plant. You have people like David Bowie really embracing that. And you've got the Golden God, the birth.
Musicians were musicians being the best version of themselves, poets, artists. But now you have people play acting or putting theatrics into it or adopting a persona that's not actually them drunk, them angry, them, you know, happy, but actually just a totally different persona.
Right. And I think, you know, the Beatles definitely did that. They were a jangly pop band for, you know, 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, they started smoking a bunch of weed and took acid. And then they were the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They were play acting, like you said. They were doing a concept album. All the soundscapes that they did on the White Album and, you know, stitching together the whole second side of Abbey Road as one cohesive track, you know, they really started to experiment. And, you know, right next door, you have Pink Floyd recording their first album while Sgt. Pepper's being recorded. And now, you know, Pink Floyd is, you know, just about to hit Dark Side of the Moon. They haven't reached that quite yet in 72. But I think we're going to be talking about that soon.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this era, and maybe it's just because all these bands are younger at this point, but this is when people put out an album a year. So you had Metal in 71, Obscured by Clouds in 72, Dark Side of the Moon in 73. For all these bands, you got Honky Dory in 71, you got The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders from Mars in 72. I'm sure there's a 73 album by him. Oh, yeah, Aladdin Sane. I mean... Everyone's putting out albums every year. That doesn't quite happen so much. Well, I guess some of our bands put out a couple of albums a year.
Yeah. And keep in mind, this is the same era as peak Rolling Stones. They're putting out albums. So, you know, we talked about 70. They didn't do one. 71.
Sticky Fingers.
And then 72.
Exile on Main Street.
Exactly. So they've just put out 5 classic albums in a row at this point.
You know, Rolling Stone never went glam. Rolling Stone stayed who they were. I mean, they practically become a cover band of themselves. That's just me. I wasn't the biggest Rolling Stones fan. I mean, oh wait, we got Mark Jacket on the line. Hey, Mark, tell us about Mick Jagger and how he's the second coming of Jesus. You know, John Lennon said he was Jesus. Oh, no, he said he was bigger than, said the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. I have a question about glam, right? So glam rock. So obviously Ziggy Stardust, mm-hmm. New York Dolls. Why? Like, I mean, was glam mostly a New York City thing? What was happening?
It's maybe the logical next step of people starting to, men starting to grow out their hair in the mid to late 60s, and now it's hit to 1970, and they've got long hair the length of a woman. You're like, hey, man, you look like a girl. And what's the punk do? He turns around and says, yeah, so what? And then he just takes it and embraces it. And
yeah, no, like full on art rock. You know, this is when art and rock are coming together in a single vehicle.
Lou Reed had a long-term relationship with a trans person for multiple years during this era. You look at him on the cover of his album Transformer, which came out in 1972. Walk on the Wild Side, Satellite of Love. So many great songs on that. So,
okay, prog rock's also happening, right? Which is progressive rock.
I think it's just very in its nascent stage at this point. You have, I mean, has Genesis really started at this point? Scorpions is noodling around. You should actually listen to very early Scorpions from their first album. It's called like The Lonesome Crow. It's amazing. It sounds nothing like Scorpions that you know, except you can hear Klaus's voice. His distinctive
okay,
voice.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But I think Yes is just starting to get their footing under them, put that together. So yeah, I guess prog is really starting here. Is it related to glam?
I don't think so, because progressive rock music, it pushes the boundaries of rock music to achieve a complex compositions and virtuosistic musicianship.
Jesus. I think at its heart, glam is a lot of, you know, just blues-based rock and roll, and it's relatively simple, and that's why it was so catchy, I think, too. But prog is, they're like, oh, these guys don't even know how to play their instruments. This was the reaction to that. They're like, oh, these guys are popular, they can't play. Let's see how we can play.
Speaking of someone who combines, like, theoretical, theatrical styles, it's Genesis. Foxtrot came out that year.
Yeah, is Foxtrot? He's got the dress.
It sounds
on.
Like it. I mean, it's their fourth album.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. So you're right. Yeah, they were full on. You know, he was playing multiple characters through his songs that were interlinked. Yeah.
Strange. That's probably almost glam too. Maybe he's actually the schism or the person who kept it together, because this part's pretty funny actually. So he would wear a dress and put a fox's head on stage during this tour, but he didn't tell his band he was doing this, which makes it so much better. Like, your lead singer, who's, you know, probably a little stranger than you, because I think everyone else is a little more, you know, drinking pints in a bar. And Peter goes, with the fox's head on, the first time, you must have been like, what is going on? I mean, I wonder if Phil Collins, like, I could be the singer.
Yeah, so it's definitely an era of flux. And if you look at what was going on in the world, you're in a post-Vietnam world. You're in the post-Watergate, or actually in the thick of Watergate. So it's a fractious place in time. So the music is reflecting that by splitting off into a lot of genres. We haven't even, you know, talked about funk that was beginning. You're starting to see reggae make its way at least into the States, into the London scene. You have a lot of different sounds. And again, popular music, looking back, was still pretty.
Yeah, I mean, Curtis Mayfield did Superfly that year. Elton John did Rocket Man. Jethro Tull had a big album. Al Green's big, going big and strong. Roxy Music's first album you mentioned. I think Paul Simon might have had his first album outside of Garfunkel. T-Rex is still alive. Michael Jackson has a couple albums out that year. The Eagles.
And I think I mentioned it before, but we haven't even really talked about Deep Purple. I mean, everyone has at least heard of Deep Purple, I think.
The song.
Or I guess when we talked about The Doors last week, nobody. But anyway, Deep Purple, everyone knows. Yeah, Smoke on the Water. This came out
72.
in 19...
72, their album Machine Head. This is when Deep Purple became Deep Purple. And this is why, you know, podcasters 50 years later are talking about them. It's because of the album that came out here.
I can't believe Machine that was Head. The opener of The Second Side. That's pretty dominant. There's only 7 songs on this album, by the way. 3 on The Second Side. Lazy and Space Trucking are songs 6 and 7. And the lyrics to Space Trucking are just wow. Wow, that's all I got to say. They rhyme Venus, Mars, Milky Way, yeah, Borealis. And come on, come on, come on, let's go space trucking. What does that even mean?
Think about this. This is pre-Star Wars. Star Trek, I guess, was out. But man had just landed on the moon
Starman
a couple years
by
prior.
David Bowie.
Exactly. The cosmos
Rocket Man.
Were ahead of you. Like, yeah. Just look at all the energy. Look at all the entertainment in the 70s.
Major Tom.
Yeah, but, you know, Star Wars comes out in the 70s. Battlestar Galactica, you had all these others, you know, we cast our eye into space. And, you know, Rush had, you know, their famous space war albums. And Hawkwind around the same time is...
Totally, which is called space rock, their style of music.
So that's what Space Truckin', I think, is about.
Hey, a band that I'm not, like, I know is really big for a lot of other bands, but I never really listened to, but I know it's big. But Big Star, number one record's the name of their debut album. But Big Star, people loved Big Star. Yeah.
Was that in 72?
I did some research. Totally. It's way older than I thought.
Yeah. That's funny because when I was doing some research on this, I didn't even look up that album because I thought it would be like 74 or even
Yeah,
later.
I would never think. But I can't believe it's credited with creating power pop.
They basically were their Cheap Trick before Cheap Trick.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It's evolution. Music is constantly evolving. They're doing what the bands are 2 or 3 years ago. They're not looking at the artists that were 12 or 15 years prior because the bands that they're following up had already taken the pieces from there.
So yeah, I actually think everyone's competing live in real time at that point, or as real time as you can get back in 1972.
Yeah, and you know, some bands went louder and deeper and embraced the devil. Some people dressed up like women. Some people played their notes really good. Some people tried to take you on a journey to space. Some people were putting on shows or plays or almost pseudo musicals. You know, we didn't talk about the Who yet. So what is the new Dad Rock saying about 1972?
Well, you know,
the Miami Dolphins were undefeated.
Okay. Well, folks, that's a wrap on our musical time machine adventure through the epic year of 1972. It's astonishing how the tunes from that era continue to influence and inspire us today. From the raw power of Deep Purple to the poetic brilliance of Lou Reed's Transformer, 1972 was a year that gave us gems we still hold dear.
You have the birth of glam rock, David Bowie leading the way, Ziggy Stardust, a new universe of music and fashion. So if you're, you know, sharing these classics with your kids or just cranking them up in your bitchin' Camaro as you drive through...
to Bermuda, the Bahamas.
Through your local subdivision.
Keep on rocking.
Rocking. We're the new Dad Rock.
Or space trucking.
Like Dio.
We rock. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Keep on rocking, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the new Dad Rock.